Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
How was your Valentine's Day? Did they forget again? Maybe you don't really care about Valentine's Day so much, but you do care that your wedding anniversary was forgotten again last year. Maybe that's the least of your worries, because it feels like these days it's just an endless cycle of nagging and fighting, just going through the motions in a loveless relationship. Are you spending your days weighing up whether to stay or go? Let's face it, breakups are right up there, aren't they, in the list of life's most stressful events. So what happens when love dies? Who gets the dog, the house, the kids? How do you sort through these things? And is it actually possible to separate with grace? Let's hope so, and let's find out. Now, I want you to share your tips with us from either your own breakup, or chances are you've had a friend or a family member go through this. And we want you to share today the tips for making it as pain-free as possible. I suppose, how was grace, you know, was it done with grace? And if so, how? Share it with me. You know, as I said, even if you're not separating yourself, chances are you will know someone who is a family member, a friend. And so I think we can all learn something from this discussion today on separating with grace. And here to help us with definitely it's general advice only, Leah O'Brien Addison. She's a counsellor and an educator with Relationships Australia. She's also a marriage celebrant. And Marty Kavanagh is a barrister, a solicitor and principal with Kavanagh Lawyers. That's a family law firm here in Perth. So Leah, let's start right at the beginning. How do you know if it's time to break up?
Thanks for having me in today. The short answer, with great difficulty. Some couples agonise for years, some individuals agonise, but usually one person is doing more of the breakup exit thought type thinking. And then sometimes it's a crisis, a particular fight or argument or upset that just is the straw that broke the camel's back. And other times it's just a knowing and somebody says, this is it, this is time.
Are there signs, I suppose, particular signs that guarantee it's just not going to work out?
You mentioned the ongoing arguments, the silences. Sometimes then when it escalates and there's violence involved, sometimes from both parties. It's not always one-sided. That there's just a point, and it may or it may not be totally resolvable, but at that moment the person think that's it, and then somebody acts, and that's what sets things going, and whether there's any comeback or not, that's a long process.
I'd love to hear from you. I'm sure many of you have gone through a breakup. As I said at the start, it's a really, really difficult. It can be a really difficult time. And you might even have friends and family who've gone through it, a brother or a sister, mum and dad. And I'm wondering if you've got any advice you can share. 0437 922 720. You can also give me a call, 1300 222 720. So if you've got those doubts in your mind and you're feeling like perhaps this relationship does need to come to an end, how do you start a conversation? Because I just want to step back a step before we move into how do we separate with grace.
Sure. Well, one of the things unashamedly I would say is get support, go talk to someone. And an example being Relationships Australia, we offer courses, individual coaching, counselling. And, you know, there's a saying, some people feel there's a stigma attached. And I say, well, Olympic athletes have coaches, not because there's anything wrong with them. So getting clear is one of the things. And it can take one partner to do that or to come as a couple. And so would recommend that. So sometimes you'll get a couple who've been together 10 years, they're going through that loveless feeling, arguing a lot. And so they will say, you know, I love her or I love him, but I'm not in love. And my answer is, so? After 10 years of committed relationship marriage, you're not meant to be in love. That can start a sort of a exploration of what we call the stages of relationship. And, you know, the love drug stage is wonderful. That's that early stage. But that is meant to be. It's great when it happens.
Is it ever?
That's why the stars do it over and over and over and over. But the bad news is it's meant to end. And stats say it's 6 to 36 months. The love drug's gone. You're on your own with whatever your relationship skills, understandings are. And then comes the next stage, which can be either doubts, hurts, anger, frustration, but exit thoughts come into it. So to be honest, anyone who's been in a long-term relationship, there will be patches where you have that doubt. Is this where I'm meant to be? And the wise couples, wise individuals will go and do their work of checking out. Is this now? You know, there's a saying, relationships are not to make us happy, they're for our growth. And I'll often sit with the couple and say, and the growth stuff sucks. Kind of knowing smile.
That's a beautiful way to think about it, though.
There's another, a local author therapist has just got a book called Marriage is for Grown-Ups, or How Your Marriage is Trying to Grow You Up. And that's not the romantic idea that we're yearning for, of somebody who's always going to be there for us, who's never going to let us down and will always love us. So we have to kind of wrestle with those different views of what a long-term committed relationship is.
Anne says, I think the biggest hurdle to an amicable breakup is knowing when to call it. Often by the time you're finally calling it over, there's a lot of bad feelings and no salvaging of friendship. And I think, yeah, spot on. And I think that's some of the stuff that Leah's just touched on. Right, Marty, now lawyers get a really bad rap. So do journos, but lawyers do. Now, what percentage of people end up in the family law court?
13% of people go to trial, so just over 10%. So 1 in 10 will end up at a trial. A higher amount of people will end up in court, but very often when you see that the decision is taken, family law is actually quite simple. Either the two of you sort it out among yourselves or the court will decide it for you. So that first realization that, hey, this decision is no longer ours, we have no ownership in the court, will do it, that's very chastening. Probably seeing your lawyer's first bill is also very chastening, and that's another reason why we stand back. But the main thing I think in starting out for it, I think is, and just could I say about family lawyers, we make decisions as well. I mean, I could have been working, and I was working for big multinationals, earning them millions and millions of dollars a year. I choose now to be involved in people's relationships, their children and their money, and I'm never quite sure what order that is in. And we've made a decision. The best thing a client can ever say to me is, thank you very much, Marty, and I hope I never see you again, for the very good reason. So the last thing you want when you come to one of the most difficult times in your life. You're not at your best. You're very emotional. You're feeling betrayed, you're feeling unloved, you're feeling very uncertain. I mean, you know, people tell me that they worry about what if I fall in, you know, the 45, what if I fall in the house? You only have those thoughts when something major happens to you. Normally, you'd just be fine. So I think the major thing is, my first advice is understand what will not happen, what's highly unlikely to happen. And these are very broad generalizations, but women tend to think that they will be financially destitute on the street and they'll have no money. That doesn't happen. If there are assets to divide, you will be taken care of. Maybe not as much as you want to receive, but you will get. And again, broad generalization, dads or fathers tend to think, I'll never see my kids again. And that's not true. And it's only in very rare circumstances at the family court would that happen. So people come to me after 10, 15 years, and you can see the weight lifting off their shoulders because that's really what they're worried about. And then people stay together, you know, for the children, not always necessarily the best idea. But they stay together for those reasons. So if you understand that if it's over, and then that's only a question you can answer, then you will be looked after and you will get a very fair outcome. But the thing is, get some basic information first. And first of all, realize that these things are not going to happen. And then either through legal aid or through citizenship's advice or a lawyer, spend the time for an hour's advice. It's very rare that we can't give you what you need to know. And then you make an informed decision and then you move on. I think the danger is the cheer squad. There's always the mother-in-law who never liked the husband.
Go through that with me, because we've just got a text in on exactly that. So Gary has just texted in. You haven't mentioned the influence of toxic friends who say, I've never liked him or her, and I know a great lawyer who can, take your partner to the cleaners. Gary, I think we're about to hear on that. So the cheer squad. We'll get some idea from... from Marty Kavanagh about what that is, and then we'll get Leah's take on that.
Okay, so generally there's always a cheer squad, and I, as a practitioner, you watch out for it. So it's either the mother-in-law who never thought he was good enough for my daughter, or vice versa. It's the friend who's been through a divorce and is now an expert on the divorce. And then there's just people who are, you know, sticking their noses in where they shouldn't really be intervening. And and once I find out who the cheer squad is, then we can deal with it. I think the important thing to realise is this is your separation. By all means, get support and have people who are on your side. But make the decision yourself, because you're setting yourself up for the future and for many, many years. And you may not like the father or the mother, but he's always going to be the father or mother of your children. And you need to make those decisions, and you need to be able to live with what you've done. And the cheer squad can be terribly toxic, because there's agendas that people are pursuing for themselves and not for you.
So we'll get on to handling kids, because that's obviously a very big complicating factor and an important factor in separating with Grace. We'll get into that in a moment. I'll just get a response from you there, Leah, around the idea of who we should turn to, because we do need support, but often we've got shared friends. It can turn toxic pretty quickly. So what's your advice in relation to managing the cheer squad and who we reach out to?
First to say, delighted, Marty, that we're speaking a similar language, because sometimes there's a sense that the, you know, the legal profession are just out to make things difficult. So I'm hearing it anew. Thank
there's
you.
There's love
that.
In a room.
So hence my suggestion about early input. And friends are great, but then once you, particularly if you're angry and you're hurt and you're dumping and you're venting, then you kind of pour all that out. But then if somehow you manage to work through and reconcile, they're sitting with all of that. And then you've got the advice from well-meaning friends, but as Marty said, with other agendas. So hence the idea of someone neutral, someone professional, who's there in your corner with you for the whole journey, because you don't always just want to hear what you think. This is a time for actually having some of those entrenched hurt ideas and stories about your partner challenged for the sake of your ongoing life, your relationship with your children, because your children are half you and half them. And so, as you say, we will talk more about the children. So the value of that, you may have a friend or two who's a confident, able to rise above that. And then the other is a great ally is a journal, where you can pour it all out, you can use your energy crayons, but you're not dumping it on somebody that then you've got to kind of be able
to. So a journal, that's a good idea. Yeah, hadn't really thought of that one.
Recommended things. We have courses about rebuilding after separation, and a journal is one of the first things. In those middle of the night, dark times where you can't sleep, get out the journal and pour it out.
Pam wants to know, morning, Jess, what part of a relationship are we in after 55 years together? Well, that is, as Leah explained before, definitely the long-term love.
Which is the mature love, where you choose your actions. Even though you want to strangle him or her, you say, yes, dear.
You pick your battles.
How can I support you, dear? Tell me more, dear.
Of course, darling.
But not with a dripping cynicism. That ain't it either.
You do tend to get selective hearing the older and longer you've been with someone as well. I want to know, though, legal advice, Marty, as a family lawyer. How do you know if you need it when you're separating?
Well, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. So basically, there are very good. The vast majority of people will resolve matters. And I said, my advice generally is let lawyers do what we're good at, which is drafting documents, because the separation process, both for children and property, can be quite complicated. But I would say to anybody, just either from legal aid, from citizens' advice, just get that 1 hour, because you're going to be making really important decisions about your kids and about your finances. And really, you're not an expert. If I'm sick, I'll go to a doctor. If you have a legal problem, get the advice.
It's not necessarily expensive either.
No. I mean, it's anything from a couple of $100. I mean, it could be $25 for half an hour with citizens' advice. It might be $200 or $300 with a lawyer, something depending on who you're talking to and seniority. But you can then make an informed decision. There are critical things that I see. Children, really important. Have a set of rules. I've had a penny for every time I was told it's very amicable, we'll be great. Well, not when there's a new man or a new woman in your life and suddenly the kids come home and say, Daddy's got a really new friend. And the mother's going straight, is she a serial killer? What is she doing at my kids? Dad's going, is he better looking than me and what's he doing? Mm-hmm. So people don't always handle the introduction of new partners to their children as well as they should. On finances, I mean, if you're in your 40s and you've been married for 15, 20 years, the next stage of your life is so important and you should get a fair outcome. And again, some legal advice. And then I say to people, now you've had my advice, you can ignore it or you can accept it, but you now have the advice and you can make that informed decision. So having a basic set of orders to regulate your time with the kids, and then you can say we can agree anything else after that, and you've got some basic guidelines and you've got a basic financial settlement, then you can move on. I think the biggest fear is that people end up 5 years later feeling cheated and feeling I really sold myself out too cheaply. And there's a lot of reasons why that will happen, because nobody likes lawyers. You know, that we get that.
I live with one, so it's okay. They're okay. They do help pay the mortgage, I've got to say.
Yeah, well, you know, we have some attractive.
Right. Some are fantastic. And I think that's the point you're making today, that, you know, family lawyers, they get a bad rap, but I don't always think that's necessarily fair. As you're saying, they can really help you.
Yeah, we're sometimes called the plumbers of the profession, but, you know, every lawyer is dealing with difficult situations, but you are at your most vulnerable. And I think the biggest sin for a lawyer in that situation is to sort of amp it up. A really good lawyer stands in, gives you sometimes very cold, dispassionate advice, a reality check. I mean, there's many a client has looked at me and said, but you're acting for me. Why are you telling me this? I'm saying you need to know this, because you're not going to thank me for 2 years in court and $100,000 for a settlement. I want to get you to a settlement as quickly as you can get there. And sometimes it's what emotional position you're in as well, which I'm sure Lee would know a lot more about. But are you ready for it as well?
Mm. I've got a text that I actually want to put you, because we might have some advice for this person. So, hello, Jess. I'm secretly planning a breakup, but I'm waiting until my youngest child turns 18 and has finished school, something we just touched on before, Marty. I bury the dislikes, brackets, unlove, and I hold for my partner deep within my emotional state to prevent arguments. I know it's going to be painful eventually, but I want to avoid the messy issue of who decides where the children need to live with, who they need to live with, sorry. I'm waiting for both to be adults so my children can make their own decision. I mean, we touched a little on that before, Marty. What are some of the issues with whether you do wait, in a sense?
Yeah, I look at, again, probably just as areas. Well, I see a lot of people who say, I'm staying together for the kids. And one of the things that comes out of that is that kids are a hell of a lot more tough than we think, and they know a lot more. They know mum and dad are unhappy a lot quicker than mum and dad think they know. Mm-hmm. So staying together for the kids isn't always, in my experience, the best thing to do, because, yes, maybe I'll pass over to Jess.
And I'd heartily agree. It depends on the quality of your relationship. How destructive is it? Yeah. Is it hostile? Because, yes, children do know what's going on, whether you tell them or not. And for small children, particularly, it's very scary, because they've picked the vibes, but then everyone's acting like nothing's happening. The other aspect is it can make you sick. So it depends how many years you're talking about here. Because harbouring resentment and hurt and hanging on to it is not good for us. So while it seems like it's a kind thing to do, I'm not sure it is, and this is the value of going to talk about it confidentially, that you can work through.
And one of the texts we've got in here says some couples regret spending in excess of millions of dollars on lawyers. I mean, I agree, and I think that's the point of what we're talking about today, is separating with grace means you may not actually end up getting to that. What we're saying today is if you can try and work out some of this stuff with the lawyer, with mediation.
Mediation, the segue. Just to say that it's not an either or. The early exploration with the counsellor to work out, am I clear that I want to separate? And then being able to support a couple through separation counselling to help manage that. And then, again, there are other agencies that offer it, but we have a mediation service that can help people arrive at their own decisions. But clearly, it's imperative to have some legal advice first, so you know what your entitlements are before you try and work it out.
I've got a text in from the same person. They're saying 2 years until the 18th birthday. So life's pretty short. 2 years is a long time, I would have thought.
It depends on the level of hostility, desperation, distance, that it's and teenagers particularly, they are learning to model what is a relationship about? What's an adult relationship about? And is this what you want to model to them? They are sometimes better able to handle that you talk, you share with them what your process is. And they might be the ones, if you let them in, who say, go for it. Don't stay for us.
Whatever you decide, correspondent, on the text line, we wish you well.
Yes. Sorry, I'll just say family therapy is hugely important as well, where kids and mum and dad actually sit together and discuss these issues. Sometimes I think parents underestimate the emotional intelligence of the children, and they see these things a lot further. And again, how unhappy are you going to be? Sometimes, and it's sad, sometimes people just fall out of love. It's the most common reason that people come to me, and you have to deal with it. And then you have to consider the second stage of your life. And do you really want to be that miserable? And one of the things that happens a lot is people come back to me and say, when I saw you, I didn't know how really unhappy I was. It's only with being out of the relationship 2 years later that I can see, why did I stay for so long? I had a lady come for me for a divorce at 86. I said, why? And she said, I didn't like him 50 years ago and I don't like him now. And before I die, I'd like to be divorced. So, you know, you can stay for good reasons and family and everything else, you know, but
astounding.
That's life.
A few of your texts, without hurt, the heart is hollow. I found the significance of this statement after separation. I sought counselling without my husband and I highly recommend it. Well, there you go. That might help the other correspondent who's weighing up options and has a son who's a child who's 16, should I say, and wanting to know whether to stay and hang it out until 18. Debbie says a long-term relationship is something more than the good times. If you want to build a good life together, you need a strong foundation based on trust, understanding and friendship. You can't just coast along and expect the honeymoon phase to last forever. Any good relationship needs to be worked at constantly and vigilantly. A good relationship is a wonderful thing. And Debbie, thanks. I think that touches on some of the things that Leah has been talking about today, where, you know, I suppose it is work and you have to work at it, particularly in those longer mature love, as Leah called it. One more text to you. Sebastian says, I've learned from experience that although the law says children have the right to have both parents in their life, it is more about the right of parents to have access. The children have no rights when a parent has a hands-off approach. They're free to leave the country and the children have no way to make that parent be part of their lives. You're with Jess Strutt on the Focus program, ABC Radio Perth. I want to just ask you, Marty, when you decide that you are going to go and see a lawyer, what do you need to take with you? What sorts of information do we need to go armed with to limit the cost, I suppose, but also wasting time for both sides?
Sure. On financial matters, it's very easy. Just a rough summary of your assets and liabilities. But in relation to children, just in a few minutes, we'll be able to get the information we need. So there's not people, you're not coming to see your accountant. People come to me with boxes of receipts. That's not what you need. You just basically need an assessment of your list of your assets and liabilities, and then the children we'll talk about. So it's relatively quick.
But I want to move on to that idea of, I had the property separation first, but we'll come back to that. When it comes to the kids, what is the best approach in terms of trying to keep things, well, I suppose, with as little toxicity as we possibly can, Leah?
Well, I think sometimes the first thing is people want to know, should we tell the children? And my view, and I think backed up, is yes, because that is, they then know what they're feeling is valid. But using language that's appropriate for the age and being careful to manage that you're not going to be bagging the other parent. Now, that sometimes takes a lot of restraint and generosity because that's so important. You know, I sometimes coach couples as to how to come up with a shared story that is true enough for both, but that is respectful. And so
it's easier said than done.
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't it?
So an example with one is like, well, there are two sides to every story. And I say, no, because the between the lines is, and you should hear my story. So finding a respectful, because the really, really important thing is that personally we have to navigate the distress, the upset of moving from a failed intimate relationship to a respectful co-parent business relationship. And that takes a lot and sometimes isn't overnight either. So that's where the support comes because that's what the relationship has to become.
Marty, can I get your thoughts on what's your advice when people come in the door, child access becomes a big issue very quickly.
Yes. It's easy enough. Be child focused and realise that the term, the best interest of the child, is about 30 pages in the Family Law Act, and it's a much more different thing. And as a parent, you're never going to be 100% on that. Strange, you might be surprised to know that parents have no rights to see their children. Children have a right to see their parents, and that's the focus of the Family Law Act. So child focused behaviour means that you've got to put your needs aside. Like, for example, saying, dads will very often say to me, I have a right to see my children 50-50. Well, no, you don't. It's a question of whether it's their age appropriate. It's actually in their best interests. So you need to be very focused on what the kids want and perceive. And that's hard because you've got to put, you know, you've got to put your own needs aside.
But and if I could add, and for children, that's terribly painful.
Yes.
That they are now placed in a position of choice between two people they would like to love. And that is a real burden on them to have to make that decision.
Yes, so and kids want mum and dad to be happy. And then you're a fear all the time is that the kids will blame themselves because you're separated. But if I could just highlight two sort of broad categories of behaviour that I think is destructive. One is leveraging money and finances against the kids. That is just toxic. And I think if you're in that, you really do have to look at yourself. You have a legal and a moral obligation to provide for your children. Don't, and the family court will give you very short shrift if you say I'm withholding child support unless I see my children X, Y, Z. That's really important. The second one that concerns me is what I call a proprietary view to parenthood. It's mothers who say, basically, this child is my child. It came out of my womb and I own it, and you will see that your child when I decide. That's toxic. And it's an approach that's not, it's rejected by the family court as well. You got to realize that this man is the only father that these kids will ever know, and this, or and vice versa, this is the only mother. So whilst you may have very strong views that I know what's best for our kids, you're going to have to be at school admissions, weddings, down the line. And these two people, two of you brought this child into the world. You need to bear that in mind. So I think focus on the needs of the child. And I'll give you one very quick example if I can. If I, every time in the family court I see in an affidavit or the judge sees, the mother says, when the kids came back from seeing dad from the weekend, they were upset. It was very difficult to get them to bed. They were cranky. And the other parent says, see, I told you, he's useless at parenting. But what you realise when you read enough psychological reports is that's how kids react. So it's not due to dad or mum at all. It's just a natural behaviour.
Because it's painful for them to be uprooted from one environment that they've maybe just settled into after a day or two, and then they have to start again. And then if the animosity continues to with the parents, which unfortunately is often the case, if you couldn't resolve the differences, it escalates when the love layer is gone. And so that's what children have to contend with too. They may have really enjoyed the time with dad or mum, but then when they arrive home, they feel they've got to kind of say what mum or dad wants to hear. And parents think they're asking, how was it for the weekend? But it can be veiled as a spying activity about the new girlfriend or what did you do?
Yes, Marty, I can see your hand fly up to comment on that one. You see a lot.
Yeah, and very much as well. You must really try very hard not to involve the kids in your own animosities and dispute. And I've had terrible situations where, you know, you'll suddenly find that the kid's getting an Xbox and everything else, but it's being told, is mummy seeing anybody? Is there people coming to the house? You know, your mum's been very unfair by not allowing me see you. That is toxic stuff and will have long-term negative effects in the kids. You've got to really bite your tongue and pretend and be excited that, you know, John and Jane are going to daddy or mummy for the weekend or whatever else. The kids will pick up on this. You cannot hide them, and it's grossly unfair on them.
What about, so that's access, and I think you said sometimes people can get a little bit obsessed as well about particular figures. I want 50.
Oh, yes. Yeah, numbers. Avoid numbers in family law if you can. Don't say it must be a 50-50 shared care. The question there is it appropriate for the child? Is it age appropriate? Everything else. On money, if I'm not getting 60%, then, well, now you're on your way to a 200,000 two-year $500 trial. Don't get obsessed. I say to people all the time, find out what you're legally entitled to and then take the arrangement that you can live with rather than the one you think you deserve. Because if you're going after a fixed number, it's a recipe for disaster.
One thing, I mean, with access, I mean, this access is one issue, how much the divide between how long each parent gets, how much time. But then that handover seems to be a real problem as well. So when the parents have to meet and then do the handover, how do you avoid that becoming a long-term? Because it seems to me that it's almost something that builds tension and anxiety, particularly for children.
Absolutely. And this is why I so work on that this is all a DIY process, that the individuals need to work on themselves to be able to find their own sense of forgiveness, generosity, so that that doesn't continue as the hostility. Now, I've heard of a case of a child as young as 18 months too, standing between the parents and saying, no fighting, no fighting.
Aww.
That they are so aware of tension.
Yeah.
And the pickup for them when either it has to be in a car park because the parents can't be on territory is painful. And there are services that manage that, you know, access
yes.
services. It doesn't have to be like that, but it takes an enormous amount of personal growth work to be able to move beyond for that long-term view. How would we like this to be in the future? Do we want to be able to be at our child's graduation together? Do we want to be able to have a wedding? Because if you don't, it just escalates and escalates till the distance becomes kind of entrenched and hostile.
And it's strange. You can go to weddings, can't you, where, you know, the in-laws haven't spoken for, you know, 20-something odd years, and it's like it baffles me. But, Marty, you wanted to add something
just
on this access
as well,
issue, the handover?
If at all possible, if you can try and normalise things. So the handover at school is fantastic because then the kids see that mum and dad are bringing them to the school. Then you go to the residence. If it's at all possible, now family violence considerations apart, if dad is coming to pick up from mum's house and vice versa, then that's natural. Having kids in McDonald's car parks and police stations or the car parks of police stations is something to be avoided if you can. Now, again, everything is subject to family violence and there being no threat. But the kids need to see you handing over and behaving nice towards each other, even if it's an Oscar-winning performance. It's for your kids. That's so much better than animosity.
Okay, a couple more texts here. This is a positive one. Far out. Linda, thanks. She says, we divorced in 2010. So what's that? Oh, long time ago now. Minus lawyers and with children top of our minds. We sold our house. We split the proceeds 50-50 plus as fair split of possessions. No money wasted on lawyers. We get along really well too. So thanks, Linda. A few texts. I'll just generalise here. Quite a few texts about the expense of lawyers and how, you know, the tactics of lawyers and their billable hours. What we're hearing quite loud and clear today from Marty Kavanagh is that not all family lawyers operate like that. And so maybe you need to go out and have a look. There was a couple of free services out there. There was a couple of services where you could go for not too much money and at least get that initial advice. So the Citizens Advice Bureau
and Community Legal Aid Centres.
There you go. So a few things there. So before you sort of get too worried about that, that's just sort of dealing with a few texts there in one bunch. This person says, last night I packed up 6 very big crates full of family court paperwork from the last 7 years of fighting. I got sole parental responsibility after that. And my children have chosen to not see their father at all. His desire to continue the fight has not helped their attitudes. Time to move on with relief. Those crates cost me about $200,000 and were all child-related. Sorry to hear that. As someone here, I mean, quite often tensions flare around children and perhaps as they get older, some naughty behaviours or things happen. Someone here is asking, you know, that they feel like they, and not that this is naughty by any means, but they're feeling like a child might be having some identity issues and that it's a little bit hard to get a partner to sort of switch on to that. Could you give some broad advice there around how you have that conversation? Would you involve the child and go and have family counselling together with the two parents?
Sometimes it'll be a parent who's concerned about the child and then will initiate counselling. Now, the other person does need to know if they're underage. And if the parents are able to be in the room together, then to encourage that. But that takes careful assessing of what the level of hostility or being over the hurt stages are. But again, yes, there's a lot of support for young people, either school counsellors, Because it is a particularly difficult time for teenagers, because teenagers are getting to the age where they legally can start saying whether they will or won't go to the parents. So I'm just interested in that.
Yeah, look, there is a you're legally responsible for your kids until 18, but there comes a point, and that number is around 12 or 13, where the family court will be reluctant to interfere with the wishes of a child. And as you know, teenagers at 12, 13, 14, they can switch moods every 10 minutes. But it's important to realise that a child's wishes will be giving a lot more attention and weight as they get beyond 12 and 13. But on the other issue in terms of counselling for children, one of the things I see a lot is one parent is concerned about the child exhibiting some behaviours and immediately takes the child to a counsellor without consulting the father.
Ah, that's a good point.
But that's not part of our policy.
Suddenly mum's got her and the child's seeing the 10 sessions and then finally the father turns out. But the counsellor's not heard from the father. If that report ever ends up in the family court, it'll be thrown in the dustbin because the family court insists that both parents are involved. Now, there's times when maybe the father is a risk or the mother's a risk, but those are exceptional. If you're going to have counselling for your child, then you must involve both parents.
And our agency insists on that.
Okay. So keep that in mind, correspondent. Hope that helps you as well. Red Sox Devil says on the text line, very tongue-in-cheek, I hope. Jess, after listening intently to your fascinating and disturbing discussion, I've decided to get sterilised. Currently on the way down to the shed to get some pliers. Good luck with that. Hopefully we've actually trying to help you today with how you can actually do this without it becoming too toxic. Okay, so I think children, we could go on talking about that forever. And obviously, if they are present, that is, to me, the number one asset, and I'm sure most people would agree, but we don't all have kids. In terms of property, not the big assets like the house and the cars, but what about that household stuff these days? You know, not many of us are, you know, embracing a minimalist lifestyle quite yet. Do you draw up a list? How do you get around this? Let's go from the counselling perspective first, Leah, and we'll move to the legal perspective.
I think it's going to be the legal perspective because that's beyond my...
Yours is just handball that out to the lawyer.
Mine is, if you're clear... Then
become a minimalist, I thought you were going to say.
Well, I've been trying all my life and I keep talking about what I need to throw at.
Okay, Marty, far away.
Please have it resolved before you come to me. There's a very senior barrister in town who will not take a case unless the contents or chattels have been resolved.
Is that right?
It is. The arguments about grandma's wedding water jug or something can go on forever and ever. So my advice is... first of all, people say, well, I've got $100,000 worth of contents. I say, that's your insurance value. Put it out on the street and you'll get $5,000 for it. Drive a list, his column, your her column, his and his, hers, whatever, and just divide it up. And if it gets really bad, you can get a valuer to come in. Then they will value everything down to a 5-cent spoon. And if you want to add it up, but there are bigger fish to fry than the contents, but it creates enormous problems. Just don't go there.
And this is where I think the counselling coaching role alongside whatever legal process is very important, because working with people to work out what does matter, because underneath those tug of wars over grandma's jar is the unresolved hurt and the unfairness, particularly if one partner felt it wasn't their choice and the other partner was the leaver or the dumper. It's been called dumper and dumpee in one of the regrouping books. So that's what. So working with that side to soften and work on the emotional healing, so that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
This person says, rule number one, keep the lawyers out of it. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. If you cannot do that, remember at some point you loved each other. And I think that's sort of going to what you started with, Marty.
Do keep the lawyers out of it, but and don't go to trial. Don't go to court if you can avoid it. But remember this, there's two big things you're going to do. You're going to make arrangements for your children and your financial life probably for the rest of your life. Come and get an hour's advice and then make all the decisions you want because it's informed then. And but it is an adversarial, very difficult process. But the number of people I see come to me with consent orders signed and they've basically given away the house or they've given away the kids because they are either in family violence or they're feeling control. Or there's this thing, I just want to have it over and done with. And that's a problem because the dumper and the dumpee, very often there's an emotional distance. The person who's ready to move on right now has been thinking about leaving for years. The dumpee has just been told they've been hit by a truck and they're in no position to actually do anything. So we are a necessary evil. As I said, if I'm ill, I'll go and see a doctor. I think seeing a lawyer for an hour, legal aid, anywhere else you can get that advice, then you make your own decisions and you move on.
And if I could add then with my unashamed plug for what we can offer.
Yes.
You're actually a good tag team.
There are a lot of helpful supportive personal growth things out there. Our courses are about whether you want to do the separating. There's Mum Surviving Separation. There's Survival Kit for Dads
Mums
for those
dads
early
forever.
Days. Then there are Focus on the Children. Do consider taking a pause and doing some of that personal development inquiry work before finalising.
That's great advice. So plenty of information out there. And just on that, I did want to point out that if you have been listening today, there's actually a family relationship advice line, 1-800-050-321. There's also a website for that. It's a government website. So if you just Google search family relationship advice, that will come up. I went through that in preparation for today and actually found some good preparation. It plays into what we have been talking about today. Last bit of advice, if you're sitting there today and you're really struggling with not whether to leave, you're already in that situation, final piece of advice?
I think important, one of the callers commented on neglecting yourself through all of this, that self-care is really, really important. It's a bit like on the airlines, and they say if oxygen pressure decreases, you've got to grab your mask first. That's a really important one. And at that time, some of one's behaviours can go self-destructive. You could drink too much and you don't sleep. So really looking at self-care, because it's battering. It's an emotional battering, and that's going to be important for you and your children and your future.
I want to end on a high note here. Jane has sent a lovely text. So not everyone separates, but we do know a lot of friends and family do. She says, I've been with my husband for 42 years. We still love each other and we remind ourselves how lucky we are. We have our little disagreements, but never out of speaking or bad moods or silent treatment. We talk about what the problem is and we get on with it and we love and respect each other. Jane, thanks for sharing. That sounds like some pretty good advice to me. My big thanks to Leah O'Brien Addison, a relationship counsellor and educator with Relationships Australia, and Marty Kavanagh, a barrister, solicitor and principal with Kavanagh Lawyers.